Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Football now has become this kind of, it's become very much a business, right? Because we see lots of, rich Americans coming by clubs or whoever it is. And maybe it started with Abramovich. Now we see the likes of like Hollywood people like Ryan Reynolds buying Wrexham and stuff. And when does, is there a danger that football is going to become, it is a business, but become a business rather than being a sport?
It's that carbon capture game.
And release. Capture and release, that one.
He's poured you a beer over that.
Well, you know, football definitely is a business to a lot of people. And I think you see it at the Premier League level, mostly Championship as well. I think the lower down the leagues of football you go, then the more you see it for what it used to be, a community thing, which is where Forest Green came from. And we're definitely a football club, but we're a very different one. We've got the environment written into the DNA of the club, and our mission is to have fun, play football, but carry a serious message and change the way our fans live and change the way other football clubs go about their business. And we can see that working. And I think, you know, the Premier League is definitely got its downsides, and the kind of the business mentality of running football clubs has definitely got its downsides.
In what way? What are the downsides, would you say?
Well, I mean, it's all about the money, isn't it?
And
fans get overlooked. Fans get not just overlooked, they get kind of milked, don't they? Mm-hmm. Like, you know, new shirts every season or several times a season. You know, like we have a shirt every 2 years. So each of our shirts lasts for 2 years. So you don't have to keep buying another one, you know. It's not just better for the fans because they need less money to keep up. It's also better for the environment as well. And as you mentioned before, our shirts are quite different. We made them with bamboo a couple of years ago, and we made them with coffee grounds most recently.
Quite rigid for the bamboo. The team didn't do very well. That.
You can buy underpants made of bamboo.
Great adjusting the ball, but
bamboo is so soft.
It's really soft. Yeah. You get a Portuguese bamboo material that I've worn. It's sustainable, so don't worry.
It's really lovely, and now it's coffee grounds.
You were wearing that over your mink. You're making an undercoat.
how hard is it to... because I think the connection we have, which we should probably say, is that... So I have a business, Kenny Kinnens. As I explained to you before, I started it 10 years ago. The mission was, what I had, was to make a sweet with no nasties. So we wanted to make sweets with no animal gelatin in it. We wanted to have no palm oil. We wanted to make natural flavors, all these different things. And as we started to do it, we realized how hard it was to create something like that. It was expensive. No one was doing it. No one wanted to do it. The margins are really tight. FMCG, fast moving consumer goods, typically margins are really tight anyway. So, you know, and everyone wants cheap things, but you have to make it more expensive. Really hard to do. And we're now sponsoring you guys, which we're really excited about. But from our side, it's an amazing sort of collaboration for us. We're super excited about it. But how hard is it to run a football team?
Well, yeah, how hard is it? I would say my first 2 or 3 years at Forest Green, it was like the uphill struggle you mentioned earlier.
I'm still on that struggle.
I'm like, where's the summit, right? Because there's so much to be done. But it was a volunteer-run club in non-league football, and the league itself had grown up around it to be full-time and professional. And it was just behind the curve on everything. So we spent 2 or 3 years really making it kind of modern and efficient and effective as an organization. You know, we had, for example, turnstiles that didn't count the number of people that went into the ground. So we didn't know how many people attended. We had guys with cash bags taking the money, right? And you know, that's like fraught with with possibility.
Yeah.
The day we changed to new turnstiles and cashless with a smart ticket and all that kind of stuff, which is a big investment, but very modern, revenue jumped 70% and never went down again.
Wait, say that again.
Some of the guys no longer had gold watches.
say that again. So when you changed it from not using cash, it went up 70%.
So that was a big example of what we changed. We changed everything. And so for 2 or 3 years, it was like, shit, you know, what have I done? I feel like that sometimes. I jump into something with both feet and then I think, oh, blimey, this is a big thing, but I can't give it up, right? And then after
Persistency is key in everything.
Yeah, it is actually.
Has to be.
It is. And then it became easier and more fun. And we've gained 2 promotions now to be in League One, and that's been just fantastic. Amazing. We work with the UN on a program called Sport for Climate Action, which is a global program to get the whole world of sport doing the stuff that Forest Green have done. That's an amazing opportunity. And we just have this incredible platform, 100 fan clubs in 20 different countries of the world. And people coming to us who are fans in the environment and or fans of football. We're attracting a new audience to the world of football and to be supporters of Forest Green. And the whole thing is just something I'd never even dreamed it could be. I never even thought about it. It was just a rescue mission, but it's turned into the most incredible platform and actually occasion. You know, every Saturday is an occasion. When we're at home, you know, go to the ground with our fans. We've got common cause. That's the great thing about football, you know. We're here to see the team, hope we win, that kind of stuff. But we've got the environment stuff all around us and nonstop media coverage. And, you know, I like to describe it as a serendipity, a happy accident.
Do you think, how much does naivety play into this, where you just go, well, this is what I think is going to work and just I want to do this?
Yeah, I think it's more, not naivety.
Not naivety, maybe. No, but it's...
But it's, what would you call it? It's doggedness, obstinance,
Because what I mean by naivety is that you had no experience in running a football club. Mm. And if they'd gone out and found someone who had experience, then it wouldn't be run differently. Your naivety in running a football club led it to its success.
Yes. And I think it's an advantage to go into an industry without knowing anything about it.
I say that all the time.
Yeah.
If you're selling trainers, find someone who's sold fridges. Like, you know what I mean?
Well, never sold anything.
Yeah, never sold anything. Yeah, exactly.
So I started a green energy company, the first in the world in 1995. I had never run an energy company.
What was it called?
Let alone a green one, Ecotricity. Let alone. And that was an advantage. I had a blank sheet of paper and all I could see were things that looked like they could be done differently and better.
What? Okay, so if you had to write down on a piece of paper in front of you the qualities that you know that you have, that you say, okay, this is what I think I'm good at. Because I think with anyone, what I had to learn from running a business is I had to very quickly learn what I was good at and what I was bad at. And you have to be self-aware in that area. What would you say you're good at and what do you say you're bad at? If anything. Is that a hard question?
What am I good at?
It's quite a revealing question.
Well, I'm good at persevering, absolutely. You know, I don't give up. Which is a good thing, can be a bad thing, but so far so good. I'm good at like imagining new ways to do things, better ways to do things. I've got no lack of boldness, I would say, to, you know, to boldly go where nobody's gone before. You know, in terms of bad traits, maybe to a degree in the past I've been too micromanaging. We're going back decades now though, because I got used to the idea of delegating, getting more people in to do different things. So like Ecotricity was my first company really. And I did everything, you know, energy trading, customer service, billing, you know, I did everything. But then as we grew, got people in to do all of those and I moved away to do other things. And so I think one of the key lessons I've learned is how to delegate, how to let go of something.
You're a control freak. That means a little bit. I am. We were just talking about that before. My hardest thing in the world, and I think a lot of people listening, It's realizing that you're not the best at everything and allowing other people to take those roles.
Yes.
I find that so hard. I found that really hard to do for so long.
Yeah. cultivate it. It's a good trait. When I was a kid, you remind me, I used to play football. I was mad for football. I'd want to be in every part of the pitch. Couldn't leave it to the other people, right? Defending, attacking, wherever it was, I had to be there.
Knackered. Absolutely knackered.
And then what happens when you do that is you're leaving gaps all over the field. So actually, right. It's a negative impact.
It was kids' football. We all chased the ball anyway.
How expensive is it running a football club?
Well, it's an interesting way to look at it. How expensive is it?
Time, energy, money, everything.
Yeah, so the time goes up and down. So right now we're in the January transfer window. We're sat at the bottom of League One in our first season, and we've got a big job on to change it around for reasons we're well aware of. And so it's taking up a fair bit of time right now. When the January window closes, that will ebb away. And then the summer will come. Hopefully we'll still be in League One. It'll be about recruitment. We're trying to build new training facilities. All kinds of stuff is going on. But that's linked into Eco Park, the place where we're hoping to build an all-wooden football stadium and Green Tech Business Park and all these kind of things. So there's time spent on that as well. It just comes and it goes, I would say. The cost, I don't look at as a cost of running a football club. I look at it as the cost of running a communications platform. Because this is what it is.
Yeah.
We have fun, and hell, our message goes around the world. Seriously, it does. I asked our PR guy for an update this week on the valuation of our media coverage so far this year to date. It was something like 40 million quid.
What?
And I was curious, and I had a reason for it as well. And it's just phenomenal, the coverage we get. And I think it's because we've done something improbable. We've combined two things that don't look like they would mix: football, a traditionally male macho culture thing, and the environment, quite traditionally not like that. And we put them together and made a success of it with two promotions and all that kind of stuff.
40 million is a lot. I hope you're charging him a healthy amount for this sponsorship.
I hope we don't get paid in sweets.
Yeah. I just said margins were tight. if I was to phone you up today, and I had a business, let's say a business in, I don't know, in food or whatever it was, let's not pick anything. And I want you to come in and say, I want you to try and change things straight away to make us more sustainable, make us more green. What were the quick changes that you would do straight away without even knowing what the business is?
Oh yeah, that's easy, that one. I would say look at energy, transport and food, because while it's 80% of everybody's personal carbon footprint, the same is true of every organization, however small, however big. You just look at how you power yourself, how you travel and what you eat. Start there. They're the big three things.
I totally agree with you. And I also think that actually what happens now is there was a focus on the individual changing, right? You have to recycle. You have to do this. You have to do that. But actually it's now down to businesses to do it, because if businesses start doing, then everyone else follows. Right. Do you think that's fair to say?
Yeah, I think it's like a... it's almost like a two-way thing. There's like a feedback loop going on. Like the Greg's example I mentioned earlier, they put out a vegan sausage roll. There's a fantastic take-up. So they put out a vegan steak, bacon, some other stuff. Do you know what I mean? And you can see it in supermarkets and motorway services. I mean, it's everywhere, because businesses have felt the demand for vegan stuff. And so what we choose to spend our money on sends them that signal. And businesses are more likely to be led by what people want than politicians are. Politicians think they're led by what people want, but they actually try to give people what they think they want. Mm. And so politicians are kind of usually a bit behind the curve, but businesses talk to politicians. So there's like a three-way thing going on. There's us, the people, there are businesses, and there's politicians that make the rules, the laws and everything. And between us all, you know, we can change this thing around. Businesses definitely want to give people what they want. That's their business to do that. Politicians also do, but they're just a little bit more behind the curve. And but it's definitely a two-way thing. If businesses don't make that stuff available, we can't buy it. So it has to start somewhere.
Yeah.
But it started.
Because it was interesting, like the whole recycling thing was kind of generated by Coca-Cola in the 80s to because basically the realization that plastic was bad for the planet was starting to, I think, impact their sales. So they went, shit, okay, we need to try and do a spin on this. Let's create recycling. So they came up with the concept.
Is that true?
And yeah, and so it's very clever. What it did is it flipped the onus back onto the consumer, and it went, hey, it's not us, it's you guys. You guys need to do it. And the same has kind of happened with the environmental stuff. It's now flipping it back onto to the individual again. And go, oh, drive an electric car, do this. And it's trying to take away the heat from the big sort of, you know, the global conglomerates.
But I think that's a good thing, though. I think that's a good thing because ultimately it's down to us as individuals.
Everything starts at the individual level. I think it's good. And that's amazing the way that the universe works, is even when you've got these nefarious guys trying to do this shit, out of what they're trying to, you know, what they're trying to do, there will be some positives that happen. And I think it has generated like this mass shift, which we spoke about sort of early on, which is really good.
Yeah, I mean, if the car companies didn't make electric cars, we couldn't buy them.
Exactly.
It's so important that they've done that. And they were the head of the game, really. You know, our government last year, I think under Johnson, just three prime ministers and 6 months ago, he said he was going to ban the sale of petrol and diesel cars by 2030. But look, the industry had already said that.
Yeah, I know.
Classic. But, you know, so I think there's almost a cynical view. I want to say that without wishing to be mean towards you. So almost a cynical view of things, because I hate the word consumers, right? But as a group of people, that's what we do. We consume things that businesses make.
Yes.
And we have that responsibility actually to spend our money differently and to take responsibility for what it is we do buy in terms of recycling and stuff like that. But we need business to help us do that because they've got to create the alternatives. And one of the good things, I guess, about a competitive business landscape is there'll always be somebody that will come up and do something different like you have, right? Where the big guys might not move and we need them to move. Mm-hmm. Somebody will come up and do it like we did with Ecotricity.
It's completely true. If you look at something like, I think it was Pepsi who bought Innocent. I think they bought Innocent.
Coke.
Yeah. Coke bought it. And Innocent are a B Corp. And now what they've done is they're making Coca-Cola look at their whole portfolio to see that everyone becomes a B Corp. Yeah. That's an amazing thing. And we've just become a B Corp as well. And for anyone who doesn't know what a B Corp is, in simple form, it's people, planet, and profit are all the same importance. What are your thoughts on B Corp and these sort of certified sort of place now? Do you think that is a bit of greenwashing or is it a good thing?
Yeah, I guess.
Uh-oh.
don't break his heart. He spent a lot of money and time trying to get that stamp.
Yeah. We're building a wooden office.
We're building a wooden ship.
It's called a shed, yeah. I think they need branding advice, right? I mean, they're the B team. Come on. What's that about? What's that about, man?
I know exactly what you mean, but at the same time, you know, getting that rosette or whatever you want to call it is, you know, at least people are striving to get it.
I accept that absolutely. So they're one of a number of different schemes that you can run, and it gets people engaged to win something and then to have something to show.
Inherently, we're all a bit competitive and we want to show, okay, we're doing something. And actually what happens is we went down this road and becoming a B Corp is pretty hard. It's actually really hard to jump through all the hoops and get the points and different things. And it's complicated to explain here. But as you're doing it, you're educating your employees, you're educating yourself, you're educating other people, your family members, because you're going through the whole process. And when you come out the other side, you have learned a lot more than you didn't know before. Mm-hmm. So actually part of it is a good process, I would say.
Yeah. I don't argue with that. And you remind me what you said there, and I think what you said a minute ago, of an experience we had. Because throughout our time as a green energy company, we've had this question of who we should and who we shouldn't work with. So we turned down McDonald's in the 90s flat. We turned down Bernard Matthews, the turkey-abusing farmer from Norfolk. He's dead now, so I got no danger of being sued. We turned him down flat. I mean, why would we want to power a business like that? And then we created this concept called Merchant Wind Power, where we would build a windmill on the site of a factory. So it was kind of off the grid behind the meter so that you didn't pay the cost of using the grid. You had less wind, but you could trade that for having less cost, and we would power directly a factory. So we did this deal with Ford, and we built a big windmill for the diesel engine factory in Dagenham, and it made all the diesel engines for Europe, and it was powered entirely by green electricity, which is a fabulous thing. And from time to time, people said, what are you doing working with Ford? You're right, they make polluting cars. Obviously, they do. But they were at least then thinking about electric cars. But the internal and external PR benefit that Ford felt was so big that they asked for a second one, and then they asked for a third one. And so just getting started by doing something with them set them on the path.
Wow.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Oh, have you ever come across someone called Sian Sutherland? She has a company called Plastic. She came on and she was talking about recycling. Mm. And I met this guy the other day who has something called PaveGen. I don't know if you've heard of PaveGen.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's amazing, right? It's kinetic energy. So quick synopsis of it.
The roads that charge.
It's a contraption that's been created where basically a human footprint on it.
So it could be a footpath.
As yeah, well. We'll create 5 watts of kinetic energy. And if
five watts for a footprint.
Yeah, for a footprint, 5 watts. So if you put it under a, they did a test where they put it under a football pitch in the favela in Brazil, and it ran all the floodlights. And they believe they put it under the main stage in Glastonbury, it run Glastonbury for the 5 days it's on or whatever it is.
Amazing.
Which is amazing. But the problem is these things don't...
Skeptical about that.
Yeah, yeah. Yes.
You don't know how much those pills make people dance.
Glastonbury burns 750,000 litres of diesel a year. I'm skeptical.
Okay. But maybe that's what it is. It feels like these, and I heard about this thing 8 years ago, and it's like it feels like these things are taking a long time to occur, but maybe because I'm not behind the curtain, I don't know.
I think the cost of energy generated that way is not competitive, and that's why it hasn't really taken off.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
What do you mean by that? As in to develop and build?
That's why we don't see them everywhere.
It's expensive to create, right?
Yeah, the energy itself as an outcome is relatively expensive.
As someone that's got an ear and an eye kind of in revolutionary tech and sort of solutions that are happening, what do you, if you had to like put your flag in one that's going to save us, if you had to?
One. Well, I don't think one will save us. I think there'll be a combination. There's the stuff we've already got, the wind and the sun, battery storage, the smart grid. Tidal lagoons is something new that we're working on. I think we've got a big role to play. This is where you build like a swimming pool out in the ocean. It's like a square or circular bund of rock.
I think I've seen this, yeah.
As the tide rises, you generate electricity and it fills the pool up. And then when the tide outside drops, you let the water back out and make electricity again.
Wow.
We think that'd be super cheap. It's also predictable 100 years in advance because the moon is and the tides are. And so I think that's got a role to play. Geothermal, which is tapping heat from underground to make electricity, that's possible. Starting in Cornwall, and they're finding that there's a lot of lithium in the water down there, which can help with the battery demand that we have.
Yeah. Yeah.
So there's a combination of things, I would say. We've got a machine in R&D that could make a really big difference on another front, which is water. So we've built a device that takes any kind of water from the rain, from what's known as grey water, dishwater, showers, that kind of stuff. Black water, which is from toilets, can take all of that and turn it into better than tap quality drinking water. Wow. And it used to be the size of a room, and we've got it down to 1 cubic meter now, which is a bit bigger than that. It's about that big. Mm. And it's just in testing. It comes out in the summer. It should be certified globally in the summer. And the purpose of it is you dig a hole outside a house and drop it in the ground, and all of the water from the house, gravity feeds into it. You have another tank the same size for storing the clean water, and you can take a house off the water and sewage grids with this device, which costs a few hundred quid.
Jesus.
Yeah.
And so while we're facing droughts in the Western world now because of the climate crisis, I think it's got a big role to play in countries like, states like California, for example, which we think of as kind of rich, and they are, but they have enormous water problems. It's obviously got a big role in the developing world as well. Just globally, right? Drinking water is going to be a really big problem in the climate crisis. Mm.
Yeah, they think it is, and that's why
it's
going to
so
be like
frustrating because like all these solutions are there, we just seem to have not been able to implement them.
Not yet.
Do, do you think that, because I'll go back to me being sort of skeptic and cynical.
Yeah, here is the cynical. You just, yeah, don't be cynical.
But have you, because I mean, a lot of people will say that the reason these solutions have been around, but it's the petrodollar economy that's kind of suppressed them intentionally, because if they rise, then they lose power. Have you encountered that sort of resistance or kind of any pitfalls like that in your journey?
No, I think these guys genuinely, if it was a better business opportunity, they would jump on it.
Money's king, right?
Yeah. That's all they're here for.
Yeah.
So, I don't buy into the idea that somebody invented a super efficient light bulb and the light bulb companies bought it and stuck it in a safe somewhere. Do you know what I mean? For example, that's another urban myth type conspiracy theory thing. Mm. Or that somebody killed the electric car, you know, in America back in the day. There's a film about that. I don't buy it. I don't think that's right. I think it was early days for the technology 20 years ago for electric cars, 30 years ago. And it just wasn't economic. Also, we didn't have the big driver of the climate crisis right in our faces, which we have now. Mm. So governments are changing the rules and businesses have to react to that. And people want better and businesses have to react to that. And so there are so many things changing now. The technology has matured as well. We can build wind and sun projects right now with no government money at all, which is a massive transformation from when we started in the 90s, when solar was incredibly expensive and wind was expensive and needed support. It's just come a very long way.
Solar's mad. I saw some stat about how much energy the deserts absorb each year, and it would power the planet six times over or something. Yeah. It's just trying to work out how to harness it. Is the
a tiny fraction of the Sahara is all it would take to power Europe.
It's so nuts.
I heard something like as well that the royal family own all of the land off the shore of the UK, and they're now putting wind turbines all around that. Is that happening? Or does that make any sense to you?
Rishi Sunak trying to build a wall to stop people coming in, probably.
Yeah, I mean, it's called the Crown Estates, and they own the shoreline and the deeper water line around the country. They do license it to offshore wind farms and all kinds of uses, actually dredging and all kinds of stuff, and they make money. So it's money, though, that doesn't go to the royal family. It goes to the government. It's not owned by the government. It's a weird thing.
It's owned by the royal family, but they
don't get the money from it.
They don't get the money from it. Yeah, I totally get it. Can I ask, maybe a personal question? Feel free not to answer. Are you driven by money?
No. Nope.
Not at all. So what drives you?
Change. Trying to make things better.
Really?
Yeah, because, I care about it. But business is a really interesting tool. Because it looks like an apparent conflict, right? I've done a lot of things. I've got a big business. Mm. But back in the 90s, I made a decision. When I started Ecotricity and wanted to bring green electricity to the world for the first time, I thought about two different ways to do that. One was a charity model, going to people and saying, look, this stuff is a worthy cause. You should help me, help me fund it. And the other was to take a business approach and to be able to go to people and say, look, green electricity is a good thing. Your customers will love you more if you've got it. And by the way, we can make it more or less the same price as conventional electricity. And it seemed to me the business model was far more likely to bring change far more quickly than a charity model.
Gets shit done.
Right? It does.
Like capitalism as a model is incredibly effective. It's just, I think we need to change what the success metric
Absolutely.
Is. It's no longer about capital. It's like kind of the stuff that you've been talking about needs to be.
I think it's been... maybe it's been hijacked. I don't really know, but we certainly need to hijack it back. We need to stop making money the sole purpose of running a business. The sole focus of a company making money for shareholders just has to change. Because when you only pursue money, you just do bad things for the people around you and for the environment around you. And we've allowed capitalism to bring us to this point, actually. I mean, we've been complicit in it because we've been buying the shit they've been making. But it's all been about the pursuit of money, and we have to change that. And it can be changed easily because, economics and the business environment, they aren't like the rules of nature. They aren't like the laws of physics, right? They're the laws of man.
Malleable, we can change them. Yeah.
We can rewrite them.
So if you were to sit here and you were to sit, in a room, but I've done this thing recently, and it's a bit hippie, but I sat in a
orgy.
I sat in a room by myself, and I really thought in my head. Okay, I thought, what are the things that aren't bringing me good at the moment, and what are the things that really brings me joy? And I really thought about it with no distraction, no nothing, and I really worked out what it was. If someone was to say to you, what really brings you joy? What is it in life?
it's doing the stuff that I do. It's doing things that haven't been done before, that are worthwhile, not just for the sake of it, things that can bring big change, like, you know, our diamonds, they're incredible, almost impossible to think it can be done.
Can you explain it a little bit, that how that works?
Yeah. So we make diamonds from the atmosphere. We take carbon out of the atmosphere and turn it into a diamond in a nutshell. And
in a nutshell?
Yeah.
That's
how we do that. That's how we deliver them.
We really are Willy Wonka.
Yeah. We should do that, actually.
Also, loving, stop stealing all the carbon.
Yeah. Yeah. And what was I saying?
So you get them from the atmosphere and how do you create them just from, how does that even?
It's a complicated process. It took us 5 years of R&D probably to crack the process. It was an idea I had nearly 10 years ago. And most things take 10 years, I find.
Yeah, always. And everything takes 10 years.
And I was thinking about geoengineering, on, you know, this fiddling with the planet to suck carbon out of the atmosphere, and thinking that's only half the job, right? Because once you've got the carbon, you've got to lock it into a permanent form. That's the other challenge. And I thought, wow, the most permanent form of diamond we know of is a diamond, right? Because De Beers tell us that. Mm-hmm. Diamonds are forever.
Girls' yeah. best friend as well.
Well,
right?
No, but yeah. And I thought, wouldn't it be amazing if we could do that? Take carbon out of the atmosphere, something we have too much of, turn it into a diamond, something we quite like to have. So it started out as a carbon capture and storage idea, but I quickly realized that the amount of carbon in the diamond and the cost of making it makes it uneconomic for large-scale carbon capture and storage. But we then looked at what the diamond mining industry, the ground mining industry, what their environment impact is. There was no independent report on this stuff. They like to keep it a bit quiet. So we commissioned Imperial College in London to look at this for us. And we found the most incredible story. So a carat of diamond would be roughly that big if I had one in between my fingers right now. It's a fifth of a gram. To make that, they dig 1,100 tons of rock out of the ground.
Get out of here.
Yep. They expose 30 tons of toxic metals to the environment in the process and consume 5 tons of water in the process and release 0.5 ton of greenhouse gas for that fifth of a gram of diamond. And there are 150 million of those dug out of the ground every year.
Oh.
Do the math.
So it's an enormous impact. Yeah. Minecraft, right?
Yeah.
If we were in Minecraft world, you could cover Belgium in 1 cubic meter blocks every year from the spoil these guys dig out of the ground.
Really?
Yeah. So it then turned into something else whereby we can call for the end of diamond mining from the ground because we can mine diamonds from the sky.
Are they the same? Are they the same thing?
Identical, except they're usually better. So last 2 weeks ago, I think it was, we produced our first perfect diamond, D in color and flawless.
What?
1 in 20,000 diamonds dug from the ground comes up that good. We did it in 500.
Did you bring any with you?
Oh, I have some in my bag.
He gave you some sweets. Can we get a couple?
Oh, you don't know. You just left it. You left it.
Your swag bag for the diamonds.
Shit.
Damn. I usually have some with me.
Listen, I really want to bring you back on. It would be amazing because I want to hear so much more about this. And this is exactly what these type of platforms here, these podcasts, right? We should stop talking about different things. We should start talking about more things like this. I want to say a big thank you for allowing Candy Kennis to sponsor for our Green Rovers as well. We're super excited about it. And just a big thank you for coming on the podcast. It's been hugely, I mean, this is what this year's about. This is the shit that we like.
The year of getting shit done.
There we go.
Yeah, I like it.
I really appreciate it. Thank you so much for being on the podcast.
And I like what you guys have done, actually, because somebody had to step into that gap and do it.
Yeah, thank you. That's very kind. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. Woo! There we go. That is the type of stuff we want, Mitt. That is the type of stuff we want.
I'm feeling enlivened. I'm feeling, inspired, I think is the word.
And what's great about it is just basically, it's just changing mindset.
Mm. Well, yeah, what I like, you know, he's got that like real sort of go-getter attitude. It's like identifying issues and then getting stuck in and then solving it.
Do you think he gets on planes?
I don't know.
Oh, I wanted to ask him. I'm sorry we had to cut the interview short at the end there. Dale had to run, but he's going to come back. Guys, I want to say a big thank you for tuning in once again. Go and check out our Instagram at Private Podcast, our TikTok at Private Podcast. We're on YouTube as well. You can watch the full episodes there. And a big thank you again for listening to us. Remember, we're back on Wednesday for another bonus episode.
Yeah.
Have the greatest day.
And I want to go watch the Forest Green.
I'm going tomorrow. You should come with me, not to watch. We're sponsoring it.
When are they playing? When are the lads?
On the weekends.
The first 11.
On the weekends.
Are they out on the pit?
On the weekends. Where was Kenny?
Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Do you ever feel like your brain is on overdrive and your mind is constantly racing? The plans, worries, and to-do lists are never ending. Calm can help your mind take a break from the noise by softening anxiety symptoms in the moment and helping you cope with day-to-day stressors. Calm is the number one app for sleep and meditation, giving you the power to calm your mind and change your life. For listeners of the show, Calm is offering an exclusive offer of 40% off a Calm premium subscription at calm.com/stressless. Go to calm.com/stressless for 40% off unlimited access to Calm's entire library. That's calm.com/stressless.